Chapter 22, Endgame. The capsule came to rest at the foot of a porch of sorts. They disembarked with care, for the transport perched on a narrow shelf that clung to the lip of a vast chasm pouring into a living valley many fathoms below. They could peer into its textured colors, the greens and blue golds carpeting the distant floor, but they could not distinguish the strange trees, the iridescent birds in their leafy pavilions, and the silvery pools themselves, stirring in the distant depths and blending into this impressionistic veil. A diffuse glow of an indeterminate source lit this inner Eden. Its light, the breath of stolen fire, sunlight baptized in living rock and reborn in secret chambers within the sea mountain. Here were glories that could not endure in the harshness of the surface world, yet they thrived in the hidden embrace of the sea, cupped in its fingers, incubating in the hollow isle. The three longed to taste of that ethereal dale, but it was not their fate to do so. This beauty existed for its own sake and for nothing else. They turned from the light. They realized at once they were not alone. The missing capsule hovered alongside their own. Before them rose an archway, its interior obscured by shadows. Stepping from the capsule to the smooth pathway, they promptly felt permeated by a low, rumbling vibration in the air and rock, the muffled whir and hum of machinery. They passed silently through the archway, one by one. Quince, taking the lead, found the egress obstructed by a door wrought of a gleaming metal. The metal felt warm to the touch. Nephileic lettering encircled a small, oval-shaped depression in the door. "Admission with ticket only," he murmured, stroking his chin thoughtfully. Sir Thomas turned to Miss Alice and asked facetiously, "Perchance thou hast yet another eyeglass?" "As a matter of fact..." With a smile, she produced the remaining lens from her reading-glasses. "Thou'rt ever the clever one, my love. Thy honey-bees, they toil unceasingly." He toyed for a moment with the lens, then gave her a long, passionate kiss.
"If you please," Quince cleared his throat.
Thomas looked up like a boy caught with a mouthful of pilfered sweets. Then he grinned. Miss Alice, for her part, gave Mr. Bellbrook a frown, which he received sheepishly. Sir Thomas placed the lens in the hollow of the door. Once more, his Alice had cast a shrewd stand-in for the genuine article. The door did not discriminate between the true lens and something merely of similar dimensions. The eyeglass happily provided these. A mechanism chattered, and the door yielded, swinging open to a rush of warm air and a mighty volume from churning cogs and wheels of the machinery in the chamber beyond. Thomas retrieved the lens with his thumb and forefinger, casting an appreciative glance its way before plunging onward. The others followed until all three stood, gazing about with wonder, in an immense long hall astir with mechanical motion. Everywhere to their left, wheels whirled, cogs clamored, and pistons prodded. To their proximate right, the wall of the chamber rose high into the shadows. The floor extended from this wall by some 30 feet, widthwise, a narrow yet profound abyss separating it from the machinery. They walked slowly the length of the floor, the ceiling receding into a great cavern above them. At its furthest end, the way was bounded by a railing of wrought metal, smooth and gleaming in the soft, shifting shadows. The inner wall of the hollow aisle lay 20 paces beyond. Below and to the left of the party, this seemingly limitless cavern tumbled into obscurity. Alice hugged the opposite wall as closely as possible, being none too fond of chasms. "This is a perfect madhouse of bottomless pits," she muttered. "They must have been birdmen who built it." Towering at the edge of the gloom that lay beyond, rose an imposing metal cylinder wrapped in an encircling stair. A beam of light emanated from the ceiling of the cavern to feed an aperture on the silo's crown. Atop the aisle itself, a dome of lenses harnessed sunlight throughout each hour of the day and dispatched this light to the aperture upon the roof of the silo, where a second lens conveyed a continuous stream of pure and boundless energy for storage within the silo and conversion into the serviceable form that drove the cogs and wheels and pistons, the capsules, everything. They stared toward the beam in awe, until from out of the shadows a voice hailed them.
"Quite a sight, is it not?" it asked.
The orator stood surveying them from atop the stair, a pistol leveled at their midst.